Because it's one thing to predict all these terrible things. Okay. But what do we do about it? Okay. There's nothing you can do about it, macro level. And none of us can influence the U.S. government or all these other governments. Can't do it. So charity begins at home, and you can take care of your own backyard and your own self.
Doug Casey, my friend, how are you? Good morning to you.
It is a good morning here in Buenos Aires, where I am at the moment.
Yeah, well, I am here in Atlanta. I think I'm an hour behind you. And it is a good morning. I'm very looking forward to our chat here. The first thing I want to really start with, there's a lot of chaos in this world right now. Lots of things going on. And we could I mean, everything from geopolitically, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, to economically. But let's start with the economics first here in the US. They have a big, beautiful bill, is what they're calling it, in front of Congress, or trying to get through Congress. What's going to happen with that? Not so much the passing, but what is that all about? Give me your 2 cents. How is that going to work out? And then we'll go from there. So.
Well, the big beautiful bill. In general, I agree with Elon Musk, which he's described it as being a ridiculous and disastrous bill, or words to that effect. And I think he's right because H.L. Mencken said, how long ago? It must have been 75 years ago. He said, "No man's life or property is safe when the Congress is in session." And when you have a 1,000-page bill, there are all kinds of laws in that bill that are basically telling you what you must do, what you must not do, and how they're going to pay for all these things. So I'd be happy with a bill that just abolished other laws. The way to approach this is the way Javier Milei here in Argentina is approaching it. And his stated intent is actually to abolish the government because the government actually serves no useful purpose. What the hell? I say that and people are shocked. But the problem is that the government as an institution, okay, I'm not talking about any individual person who runs the government. I'm talking about the institution itself is an instrument of pure coercion. There's no voluntarism about the state, about the government. They gussy it up by saying, well, we're a democracy where the people rule. This is bullshit. They don't rule. At best, what you can do is vote for Tweedledee or Tweedledum that one of the two parties put up and hope for the best. The government, if we're to have a government, since it's an institution of pure force, should do nothing but protect you from force. That implies a military to protect you from force outside of the country, police to protect you from force within the country, and a court system to allow you to adjudicate disputes without resorting to force. So that's all the government should do. And I do mean absolutely all. Now, in the case of the US, that implies abolishing or breaking up or distributing now, here and now, Social Security, getting rid of Medicaid, getting rid of Medicare. And about, I'm picking the number out of my head, I'm not far off. About 60% of government spending is on those programs alone and associated welfare programs, which do nothing but corrupt the populace and help to bankrupt people that are actually paying the taxes. the national debt, you can make a good argument that the U.S. ought to default on it, quite frankly. We can discuss the shocking. And the military, Trump in his big, beautiful bill, is working towards increasing, believably, military spending by another $200 billion per year, when what they should do, for openers, is cut military spending by about 75%. And all of these cuts that I'm talking about should result in, or should be accompanied by, pro rata reductions in taxes of all kinds, and abolitions are better than reductions. So, okay, that's kind of my opening statement in answer to your question.
Well, you just said something, two things that I really want to pull out a little bit more. You said you can make an argument if the U.S. to default on its government debt. And this big, beautiful bill is adding significantly to that. And it almost doesn't make any difference to me just because of where we're at in this time in history with the debt. But what do you think is going to happen to that? Do you think we are going to default? And what does that look like if we do?
Well, the debt can never be repaid. It's simply too large. That's all there is to it. And the nature of the debt, insofar as it has to be serviced, it's a liability that's got to be serviced by the next generation or several in the future of American citizens. It's so large that they're going to be turned into indentured servants to pay off that debt. And frankly, I like the idea of defaulting on the debt because it's going to punish the people that have been codependent with the U.S. government, that have financed its depredations. The U.S. government, or government anywhere, is not your friend. It's not your compadre. And it's a dangerous predator that acts as a parasite on society in general. You know, as I say these things, they seem logical and natural to me and all the people I associate with. But I'm sure many people that are listening to this are saying, it's outrageous. That's ridiculous. Would you say I'm right or not about the way most people react to the concepts of, in effect, anarcho-capitalism?
If you're asking me, I would say most people think you're an alien from outer space, if that's what they hear. If you're asking me specifically, I am 100% on board. And I mean that with, like, not just because you're saying it, but just working through this. And it's really basic, and it's not complicated in what I'm trying to say, but you do need to work through it. It's starting with the government is not your friend. It's not looking out for your best interests. At best, it's an oligarchical system. At worst, it's enslavement from the masses, if you would, from whoever has the most votes.
That's right. It's a totally corrupting influence on society. And of course, people in general like the idea of the government because there's a lot of propaganda that equates the government with the society, and they're two different things. The government is basically a dead hand on society itself. And I really, I love America. I've been to 155 countries. I've lived in 10 or 12, really. As I said, I'm in Buenos Aires right now. Spent a lot of time down here in Uruguay across the Plate River as well. But although I like the U.S. a great deal, I like America a great deal. And I must point out that America is really not even so much a place. It's a concept. It's an idea. and it's unique as an idea, but it's become corrupted. It's turned into a gigantic multicultural domestic empire. Original values of America are being washed away before our very eyes, and the population's being replaced by people of totally alien culture. And that's changing the way people look at the original values of America. It's founded on concepts of liberty, free speech, free markets, free thought, things of that nature. That's all going away, buried under tons of legislation and bureaucracy. And the U.S. itself is probably the most dangerous institution in the world today. I know people are going to clutch their pearls hearing that. Because the U.S. has active combat troops in over 100 countries around the world today, military bases everywhere. And it's not necessary. It's provocative. It's bankrupting the citizens of the U.S. And the next step, I'm afraid, with what the U.S. is doing in the Ukraine, supporting the utterly corrupt and disastrous Zelensky regime, so that they can lose hundreds of thousands of young men fighting the Russians. It could result in World War III, which is to say nuclear war. And there are lots of places where the U.S. is sticking its nose where it doesn't belong at all. Least of them is in Gaza, where it's aligned itself with one state, Israel, against all the others. Now, I'm not a fan of any of those states, well, any states anywhere. But in the Middle East, these people just have to work it out between themselves. It's none of our business, only making things worse. So the way the world is being run right now, It's a dog's breakfast, and it's going to end badly with World War III. Whether that comes before or after a collapse of the economy, which is inevitable and actually in motion, I don't know. But it's like a 1-2 punch to the average American, and the average American doesn't see it coming.
No, they really don't. But let's work that out here. You mentioned so many things, the military industrial complex, you didn't name it that, but I'm assuming that's what you're referring to. The collapse of an economy, really, that's with all of the debt and all of the spending. Project us out over the next few years, handful of years. What does this look like? And one of the reasons why I've read your stuff and listened to you throughout, really, it's been decades now, is that you have a great understanding, and we all get things right and wrong. You're mostly right. You have a great understanding of what the world will look like in the future. So work that out for me in the next 5 years. What does the world really look like over the next handful of years?
Well, you know what Yogi Berra said about this? What did Yogi Berra say about the future?
I know what you're referring to.
We both know the quote from Yogi. One of the reasons why Yogi Berra quotes are so great is because of the way he phrases it. And I'm trying to recall exactly the way predicting is hard because the future. Well, I'm sorry I brought it up since I don't have the quote on the top of my tongue, but making predictions about the future. It's what is going to happen? Nobody knows, of course, But trends in motion do tend to stay in motion. And a trend in motion does tend to accelerate until it reaches a crisis point. And then something happens. Oh, massive change. End of the trend, which is, you know, catastrophic for a lot of people that have been following it. So let's look at it this way. Let's go back before World War I, when the U.S. government was teeny-weeny. There was no income tax. There was no inflation. We were on a gold standard. Sound money. No taxes, no inflation. Very few rules and regulations. And the U.S. was booming. Things started changing under Teddy Roosevelt and McKinley, who was kind of Trump's favorite president, with the Spanish-American War, the conquest of the Philippines, the building of an international empire on the part of the U.S. But we've gone from a time when basically 100% of all the U.S. government's income came through import duties, which I'm not in favor of, incidentally, but that was basically the sole source of the U.S. government's income. You can live with that. But now, instead of being 5 or 6 or 7 or 8% of the GNP, the U.S. government now, directly or indirectly, is taking 30 or 40% of the GNP. And foreign countries are even worse. The same is true of Europe. There's no income tax, there are no central banks. That's all changed too with World War I. So that the trend in motion for over 100 years now has been towards a bigger, a more aggressive state with more rules, more taxes. Okay. And it's still growing, especially in Europe. Europe is a sinking ship at this point. They're much worse off than we are in every way possible. But the U.S., the state's gotten completely out of control. I think it's going to come to an end with the bankruptcy of most Western governments at this point. That's in the cards. And with the destruction of the U.S. dollar, the European euro. And this is going to be a real problem for individuals, for their employers. We can see massive unemployment, social instability. It could be something resembling chaos. And I'm not even talking about World War III, what would that look like if we have? And we could be on the edge of World War III, too. Well, nuclear war, turning major cities into burning crisps, basically mass murder is what it would be. But will World War III even necessarily be with nuclear weapons? Well, yeah, probably. I think what's more likely is cyber war, since the whole world over the last couple of generations has come to run on computers. And if the computers don't work through cyber war, you won't be able to pump gas, you won't be able to refine gas, you won't be able to transfer your digital money through the banks, which will all fail. They're all bankrupt anyway, the banks, even now. Utilities collapse. No aircraft. You know, cyber war would be a complete disaster. All the physical infrastructure would still be here, but we couldn't make it work. That's a possibility. Perhaps even a bigger possibility is biological war. I mean, why is big, clunky, stupid nuclear weapons? When what you really want to do is just get rid of the enemy people. And it's become very, very sophisticated, where the bugs can be distributed and attack only certain racial groups, areas, and only last for a month before. All kinds of possibilities like that. So the chances of World War III not resembling World War II, really, in any serious way, be much, much worse. I think that's likely. So we got economic depression. We've got World War III. We've got sociological upsets where, you know, half of the U.S. at this point, basically, well, actually, it's much more than half. It's like 70% of the country are net recipients of government projects. And if the government is not in a position to send them money anymore, they're going to be in trouble. And they're going to be angry because they're going to think, we're in this. So it's a very unstable situation. Forget about the political ramifications of Trump being in office. He's a real mixed bag. I mean, there's things to like about him, no question. But there's a lot to dislike about him. Makes for an even more unstable situation.
Yeah, it really does. And it's interesting, I guess, not interesting, but it's confusing just working all of this out. And again, as you said, nobody really knows what exactly is going to happen. And I would even add, a lot of what you said is already happening. You talked about like World War III. You can make a big argument that we're in World War III now with the proxy war over in Ukraine and in Russia, what's going on there with NATO and us, droning people or assassination attempts on heads of states with drones or whatever. I mean, that sounds to me, that conflict over there sounds to me like that's World War III. So, different than what you just said.
It's been out of control. It's been out of control because these criminals, they're more certainly, but they're also criminals that run the European Union and individual countries, in particularly France, Germany, and Britain. They're plumping for World War III. They want to engage Russia in an actual war, ship them weapons, encourage that little bedbug Zelensky to provoke Russia even more at this point. So it ain't over till it's over. It's also Yogi Berra, but I remember this one. And I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit. I mentioned to you off camera, I have five children. They're ages 16 to 24. So they're either right out of age, if you would, of adulthood or coming of age of adulthood. And you've been working on a project. Talk to me about the project and really just to, and I'm selfishly saying this because I'm a father of these people, these kids, my wonderful kids that are coming of age. What should they do in light of all of this chaos is what I'm calling it.
That's right. Because it's one thing to predict all these terrible things. Okay. But what do we do about it? Okay.
Right.
There's nothing you can do about it. Macro level. And none of us can influence the U.S. government or all these other governments. Can't do it. So charity begins at home, and you can take care of your own backyard, your own self. And one of the great tragedies of the current world is the fact all young people, but this book I'm working on with my partner on my podcast, Doug Casey's take on YouTube, Matt Smith, is directed towards young men, at least initially. We'll have one later for young women. But The answer is the same for both young men and young women, just with a lot of logical modifications, obviously. So one of the great tragedies is that everybody thinks that they ought to, when they're 18, go off to college for 4 years to get an education. Concept. Get an education. You go to some place for 4 years at great expense. The four of the best years in your life. And you go to an institution where you're going to listen to people that are running on automatic, professors, college professors. And incidentally, the college system has been universally taken over. Marxists, hardcore leftists, socialists. So when you send your kid off to college today, it's not like it was 100 years ago or even 50 years ago, where a kind and wise Mr. Chips is going to give them all kinds of knowledge, all kinds of wisdom in the 4 years. No, it's not at all. They're going to be indoctrinated with all kinds of noxious political concepts. And you're going to pay a huge amount of money for that privilege. And that's 4 years of time. The average kid gets out of school. He's got a giant amount of debt around his neck like an albatross. It's going to turn him into an indentured servant, paying it off for the rest of his life. Can't get out from under it. Can't bankrupt yourself even. And he's lost that 4 years. And he's picked up all kinds of really bad ideas and bad habits. So it's an incredible scam going to college where everybody thinks they have to go. It's crazy. Matt and I have done or are doing, the book will be out in about 3 months, is we lay out precisely what a young man or a woman should do with those 4 years. I mean, you can't just sit in your mom's basement and play video games if you're not going to college. Okay, so what do you do? Well, we've divided the program into 16 quarters, 4 years, 16 quarters. And each of those quarters, you're self-obligated to accomplish something. For instance, through the 16 quarters, you take advantage of the auspices of the teaching company, the Great Courses series, where they get world-class professors that give a command performance lectures on aspects of chemistry, biology, astrophysics, physics, geology, just all of the academic subjects. And assuming you even take courses like that in college, most of the colleges people take in college, are just crap courses. And you go to your class, and if you go to your class, you're probably half awake from staying up late and partying the night before. And assuming you stay awake, your mind is going to wander. If you take notes at all, they'll be illegible. You may not even, if you remember 1% of actual hard data that is presented to you in class, like just sitting there like a bump on the lawn, it's a terrible form. So anyway, we cover all the academic things that you're supposed to learn but don't learn in college with courses that we laid out. Okay. But the most important thing is not just to absorb some knowledge. It's to actually do things, okay? Do things. For instance, Matt's son, Maxim, has just finished learning to sail. What did he do to learn to sail? He went from the Falkland Islands, where the war was some years ago, off the coast of Argentina, and sailed around Cape Horn up the coast of Chile. And that took him about 3 weeks, and he learned to sail. Now, it was a course. It was their people on the boat, but he really knows how to sail now. And he knows the ocean. And, okay, simultaneously, in this quarter, he got his sea card, learning how to scuba dive, and has been diving. Now he'll continue diving and learning about the ocean and that skill in the future. In different quarters, he'll take several courses learning to use guns, kinds of guns, pistols, rifles, this and that, hunting, wilderness survival. Great. Another quarter is going to center around going to Italy and learning to be a competent chef. Great skill to learn. Every man should know how to prepare food elegantly, competently, so that you actually want to get a job or start a restaurant, which is a bad idea. It's a too tough a business. But be expert in food and cooking. It goes on to aviation, learning how to fly a plane. Another set of courses he's going to take are learning to drive heavy equipment, everything from backhoes to bulldozers to graders, you name it, the whole thing. And this qualifies you for a very well-paying job that will finance further courses. So you're doing several things at once. In your spare hours, you're learning the things that you're supposed to learn, but nobody does in college. You're doing things that you're qualified to do everything and anything by the end of this course. And, of course, you're also learning, taking courses, in how the world works financially and economically. When I was in college, neither me nor any of my classmates, and I went to what was considered a high-priced spread good university, we were all completely ignorant of the nature of money, what you do with money, how you save it, how accounting works, how business works. You figure these things out. But it's good to have some basics so you can stand on the shoulders of people that have already been there. So anyway, by the time you finish the 4 years of the preparation, not only are you doing really active things, but another thing is, one quarter, Max is going to Thailand to study Muay Thai and other martial arts in Thailand. Thailand's a great place. I love Thailand. He'll have a lot of fun. And come back as an accomplished martial artist, which he can continue that stuff too. So at the end of 4 years with the preparation, you're essentially a Renaissance man. And you're the type of person any executive, any company would love to hire, but you don't want to work for some company to get some experience. Okay, great, it's fine. But the next step is to become an entrepreneur where you're not working for some goofy company living in a cubicle like all these idiots that went to college are going to have to do. So anyway, that's the story in a nutshell. And that's what you should do. I'm talking to people of under 30, okay? The world is in big trouble. Nasty things are going to happen. You got to prepare yourself. Okay, that's how you do it. Okay, that's what I'm saying. Instead of going to college for 4 years, at great expense to you. Listen to stupidities and be corrupted.
On that note, I remember you gave, this was in the late 90s, and I'll name drop if it's okay with you, the college you went to was Georgetown. I remember that. And I think you were classmates with Bill Clinton. Is that correct?
Yeah, Bill and I were classmates at Georgetown.
There's a funny story you told, and this was 30 years ago. It's like you went to class half asleep or something, and the professor finally said something interesting, and you said, yeah, that was interesting, and then you went back to sleep.
That's a typical college experience.
Right. Anyway.
Yeah.
It really is.
Almost any professor that you have in college, typically, you're going to be in a large lecture hall with 50 or 100 other students. the professor himself is talking. If it's a smaller class, it's going to be a grad student who's training.
Right.
It's a scam. I mean, college is a scam.
Yeah.
It's like kindergarten for high school graduates who may not feel ready to join the world. So it's like a halfway house, joining the world.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, if you're a smart kid and you are serious
about
STEM courses, science, technology, engineering, math, okay, and you want to get into a formal environment to progress in those things, okay, but that's not what college is all about, even if you're taking STEM courses. That's post-grad.
Yeah. So I remember my college experience. I had a great time. Do not get me wrong. I had a great
time. Me too.
Right. But I was looking back on it right after I got the bill. It was a $60,000 bill. And this was in the late 90s. And I thought this was not worth it, number one, because now I got to work this off. I think it paid it off over 10 plus years. And then I was thinking back of what was the best thing I did, or what did I learn in college? And the best thing I did was I traveled. I traveled to Europe, spent a semester abroad and backpacked Europe. You were one of the inspirations for that. And I learned so much, just not only looking at great pieces of art and artifacts and museums, as well as the actual historical, where things happened, whether that was World War II, World War I, or before. But just even the process of just being a young man and figuring things out, being in a new country, navigating the country, trying to network, talk to the locals, all of that, it was such an incredible education. So I've told that to my kids. Probably the best thing you can do is pack a bag and go travel, because you're going to learn more than sitting in a classroom. So
that's right, because if you just stay around the place where you're born and grew up, you're like a potted plant. And this is a good survival strategy for a human. It's not even survival strategy for a plant. It's all they got. You're waiting until somebody comes by to eat them. So no, you're quite correct.
Right. Well, we'll end on there. I'll put a link to your podcast and YouTube channel, Doug Casey's Take, in the show notes. You have been quite the influence. Go ahead.
I also have a blog. It's called internationalman.com. It's free, and I write there. David Stockman used to be Reagan's OMB director. He was quite famous when Reagan was in office. He's very bright. A bunch of really great people right there, and it's free. So everybody ought to opt into internationalman.com too. Got to mention that.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you for that. I'll put that as well as in the show notes below on the YouTube channel, as well as the Apple and Spotify podcast. Doug, it's always a pleasure having you on. I'd love to have you on again soon, especially when your book is launched, and I'll probably be one of your first buyers.
Well, that's fantastic, Andy. We'll probably give you a review copy. I'll go you one better. But in 3 months, the book will be out, and we'll see how the market receives this radical preparation, which we're promoting.
Yeah, well, I look forward to it. Thank you, Doug. I appreciate your time.
Pleasure, Andy.